Are you ready to advance your career, hone your skills, or explore new vocational paths without spending thousands of dollars to further your education? Skillfeed.com features over 65,000 video tutorials to keep your creative and technical skills current. Choose from long courses or short tutorials called Skill Snacks, featuring courses on business, web development, education, finance, leadership, photography, and more. Get your 30-day free trial now. Log on to skillfeed.com/radio. That's skillfeed.com/radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Unwrap. Hidden Beach. What?
Well, good evening, brothers and sisters, and thank you for tuning in to the PRF Table. I'm your host, Brother Dunlap, and we're just excited once again that you come to this place where you have the freedom to listen and to participate in this open and honest conversation about possessions, resources, and finances. We always say that at the PRF Table, everyone has a seat. It doesn't matter whether you are Jew or Gentile, black or white, rich or poor, meaning spiritually or physically, saved, unsaved, Christian or not, you have a place at this table. For those who have sat at the table before, we pray and believe that you've been able to see that this is not just a radio show, but a community where everybody has the opportunity to just feed, eat, and serve at this particular table. So we got a great show lined up for you. We have our co-host, Brother Warren Feaster. How you doing this evening, brother?
I'm doing fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know American Idol is on. So if you hear a little bit delays, ladies and gentlemen listening, then that may be because his attention is not fully there. We also have, that's a joke, everyone. We also have with us a good brother who's been on the Blog Talk Radio show with us before. This is Brother Lawrence Thompson, Reverend Lawrence Thompson, Minister Lawrence Thompson. Brother Thompson, how you doing this evening?
Man, I'm doing wonderful. Glad to be back on the show. Appreciate you inviting me.
Yes, sir, and we thank you so much for, you know, accepting this invitation. And our other co-hosts, for those of you who are maybe looking for the female voice of the conversation this evening, Sister Adia Sanders, she's under the weather right now. So we love you, sis, and we hope that you go ahead and get rid of that bug real quick so we can be back together fellowshipping next week. So let me just go ahead and get into the show. Over the last few weeks, we've been focusing on the subject of stewardship. You know, we started off on February 14th with Attitudes About Stewardship. That was the title. And really, that was an introduction to this whole entire series, which it really didn't start as a series. It just wound up going that direction. That's just how God operated. And then on February 21st, we had Brother Saeed, who sat with us from Philly, as we talked about stewardship, but the diversities of stewardship. And then last week, we were led to have the dialogue about stewardship at home and work. And we only hit on work a little bit, which is the reason why we're going to really put some emphasis and focus on stewardship at work for this evening's show. So just sit back and relax, and we got a great show lined up for you, and we're going to let God have his way and do what he's come putting us to do, which is to have this type of dialogue because we know it's really, really needed. So Brother Feaster, Brother Lawrence Thompson, let's just get ready to go straight at it. One of the things that I want to do just for those who weren't here is really just to recap a little bit about where we were. And there was four things that came out of the last show, and I asked, and we actually posted this on the Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances, and asked everybody to, you know, go and look at the thoughts that came out of last week's show, and if they had any others, add to the list. So we do encourage everybody listening to go to the Facebook page and go ahead and find that link and post some additional comments underneath. So the couple things that we got from last week's show with stewardship at home was, one, it's a learned behavior that starts in the home. And myself and Brother Feaster and Sister Sanders, we had a lot of conversation about that, and we all didn't agree on it. But one thing about it is not about us always agreeing. It's about us sharing our different experiences, and that's just what we embrace here at the PRF Table. The other thing was, we are all born with the capability to be a steward. The third comment was, we learn, or what we learn at home, we take with us to the workplace. And I think that's the statement that's going to catapult us into this particular show tonight. And the fourth and final thought that I pulled from last week's show was, we must not be wasteful. We had a lot, Sister Shelley Caldwell, who's the founder of the We Speak Association, under which we fall under. She came on last week, and she talked for about 10 minutes about being wasteful. So we're really going to hit home on these two subject areas tonight. And we just want to remind everyone that if you want to join into the conversation, if you want to join into the dialogue, which we highly encourage it, just press 1 on your dial pad. We'll see you light up on the switchboard, and then we'll bring you into the conversation. So Brother Feaster and Brother Thompson, here's where we are. You know, I asked a couple of questions on Facebook, and we'll actually go to a couple of the responses later on in the show. But one question was, what is your attitude about the place you call work or your job or your career or your vocation? And so, Brother Thompson, if you can lead us off, if you will, but give them a small introduction, if you can, or if you will, to the listeners so they can understand who you are and your experience. And if I feel you left anything out, my brother, you know I will not hesitate to go ahead and bring it out. But, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Thompson.
Okay. Well, as my brother just pointed out, my name is Lawrence Thompson, and I work in the field of information technology. I've done that for majority of my life since from high school on. And I work for a local company here in Columbus, Georgia, pretty large-sized corporation. And I work in IT. I've been with the same company about 15 years, so my attitude regarding the place I work is I'm pretty happy about where I work and what I do. I've recently been promoted right after I was turned down for a promotion about 9 months ago. So if you would have asked me how I felt about my place of work 9 months ago, I might have had a different story than I do today. I enjoy what I do. Some new exciting things happening in our field is constantly changing and evolving. The company I work for is not an IT company, so essentially, you know, we constantly look at the position of, you know, our work can be outsourced and things like that, like a lot of current professionals out today, regardless of what we do and how we do it. But that's basically kind of what I do and, you know, how I feel about it. If you want some specifics, I'd be glad to give them to you, but, you know, sure. I don't want too much information.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead. Roll with it.
No, you tell me what kind of information you're looking for. What would you like to know specifically? I'll be glad to tell you anything.
Well, if you can, you know, you're in a supervisory position, and you have individuals that work underneath you or have worked underneath you for a while. So maybe you can share some of what you've seen from the workplace about not only your attitude as far as how you feel about your position and your job as you've done, but what is it that you see with others' attitudes, especially from a supervisory perspective? Because we talked about stewardship, and stewardship, as we all discussed before, is the responsible management of something that is entrusted to you. So the position that you have at your particular place of work, yes, that's a position, in my opinion, that God has given to you, and it's your responsibility to make sure that you do the things necessary to keep the job, to make sure that you're coming to work on time, things of that nature. So what are some of the attitudes that you see from the workplace as a supervisor, somebody in a supervisory position?
Well, you know, one of the things I think about when you talk about people's attitudes towards their job or their profession, you know, a lot of it is mainly positional, determines, you know, where we are at this particular place and time. Do we feel like we're in a position to where there is upward mobility as an option? And, you know, I think, in my humble opinion, I think the attitudes of people who feel like they're working a job and those that feel like they're in a profession are drastically different. A lot of folks that feel like they're just working a job or whatever, you're 8 to 5, 9 to 5, you know, they're just trying to do something to get a means, resources to, you know, have a semblance of some of the things they want in life. Those that are working a profession are people that have gone out, got the training necessary for a specific field, doing something that they enjoy, they like. So their attitude is going to be different, in my opinion, just by the nature of what level they've allowed themselves to come to at this particular point in time. Just for example, when I first started out in this field in IT, when I was fresh out of high school, and I was basically just working a job trying to get into this area, my attitude about it was I didn't want to get up in the morning to be there. I gave my boss and those to who I worked for a difficult time. And that's what you see, in large part, with those who are just, you know, have basic employment. But those people that have gone out And essentially, you know, like I said, going to training, been to school if necessary, and going out into a field of study that they have chosen to be a part of, their attitudes oftentimes are going to be a little better because this is something that they want to do, first of all. Two, they've pretty much at some point probably had their choice in terms of where they wanted to work, so they've chosen the work environment. And then a lot of it, like I said, is also situational because it depends on if those that work above them have created an opportunity for allow them to succeed and grow and improve as an individual, as an employee, as a professional. So those things, I think all those things come together. And, you know, I've worked with people that have had the right attitude and the right mindset and the right focus and the right work ethic. And I work with people who've not. And it's all been because of not just things that was under their control. A lot of it was, you know, they're in a situation where their current supervisor or manager is a micromanager. No, most people don't work well in those environments, and they're constantly being, you know, watched over and double-checked off everything. And that creates a bit of a tensional situation. So I try to lead people based upon what they're most comfortable with. So I want to get the most out of that person. So I'm going to basically get to know their personality, get to know their what makes them tick, what makes them work at the most efficient level, and work within that framework, and try to let them know that, you know, it's not just about trying to work out of them, but also want to create a situation where it's not just good for the company, but good for them and good for what they want to accomplish in the future. So that's just kind of the general way I've noticed things to kind of take place.
Well, thank you for that. You said a lot. You know, you talked about upward mobility and opportunities to advance. And I think it's very crucial when we start talking about stewardship in the workplace. I want everybody to understand this is not about talking about what people are not doing. This is not about bashing individuals. But what we do on this show is we get down to the root cause. So when we experience individuals who are not seeming like they have that spirit of gratitude about where they work, there's often some reasons behind it. And I can tell you, you know, right now, everyone who is listening, you have three ministers on the line. And Brother Fisa, you put it up before, you got to have courage enough to care. So as we are walking around in our various capacities, whether we're in a supervisory capacity or whether we're dealing with a subordinate or just a peer, we have to have the courage enough to care, in my opinion, about what's going on with the individuals. Because the individuals are who makes up why we are able to do what we're able to do, because none of us can do it by ourselves. Brother Feaster, and I know from you being in the military, you have a lot of individuals that are underneath you in one respect or another. Can you tell us how that general military authority works? Because that's not a term that, you know, in the corporate sphere, like myself and Brother Thompson, you know, you have a supervisor and pretty much that's it. You know, in the corporate sphere, we have this attitude or there's this attitude of I work for my boss or I work for my supervisor, and if you want something done from me, you don't have the right to tell me to do something else because I know where my lane is. But in the military, can you explain to us a little bit how you see that as being a little bit different?
Yeah, in the military, there's two types of authority. You have direct military authority, meaning – like you're saying in the corporate world, these are the people that work directly for me. I have ownership of them. I'm the one to lead, mentor, guide, discipline, you know, assign tasks, assign missions. Those are my soldiers that I'm responsible for. Then you have general military authority, and what that is based on your rank alone, it doesn't matter who that soldier is, based on your rank alone, you have authority over them. Now, it's interesting because I've been in over 20 years active, and that term is still in the military, but the mentality of the soldiers has changed. So when I came in 1990, general military authority was a big thing. Because we were raised that you respect your elders. We were raised that those that have position and power over you, that you would do what they said. And you got problems, you got complaints, you got situations, whatever. That's fine. However, that's still an adult, pretty much is what we were told growing up. That's still an adult, and you're still a child. And when I came in, that's what it was. That general military authority was easy because as soon as I saw someone that outranked me, I understood that this person is in a position of power, regardless of how I like what they say, and a lot of times at the lower ranks, you do not like what they say, you still have to execute. However, right. In today's society, that has changed. We still have general military authority. That has not changed, but the mentality of the soldier now is soldiers say it like this. They respect the person, not the rank. When I came in, we respect the rank, regardless if we respect the person. But now you have to win a soldier over. A soldier, you have to prove to that soldier that you're trustworthy. You have to prove to that soldier. And once you earn that trust, once you gain that position with them, I mean, you have them. They'll do whatever and will not question, just like, you know, when I came in, you did question it. But it's you have to earn it. Now, when I first came in, those that are above me earned where they were. Regardless if I understood or knew their part, they earned it just by having the rank on and what the things that are required to achieve those ranks and those higher levels and those positions. It's the same today. However, these younger soldiers now, they don't care. And I said all that to say, I've been saying this for the past 2 weeks, and it just, as soon as Brother Lawrence started talking, I heard it again. It's what you value, how you value it. How do you value that position? How do you value that power? How do you value that person? How do you value that job? You know, and he said there's a difference between someone working a job and someone working a profession. And I think the answer to that is it depends on how they value what they're doing. You got two people working at McDonald's, both of them are cashiers. But one of them value that job as just, this is the answer to me. You know, I'm just trying to make my little minimum wage, what, $7.25, $8.25 hour. I'm just trying to make it. But then you got somebody else who's, you know, this is my livelihood. Well, you got two different people working the same thing, and based on their attitude, based on how they value their job, they're going to react differently to things. They're going to do things different. And I'm going to stop right now.
Well, and remember, you know, I was there with you during the early days.
Right.
Because that was both our beginning of our military experience. And there was another dynamic that was involved in that as well, Brother Lawrence. That dynamic was we were over in a war zone. We were kids over in a war zone. So we had to make sure that we listened to those who were over us because we had not been inside of that type of environment before. Yeah, I grew up in Philly, and yeah, they were shooting and drugs and all of that. But I promise you, it ain't nothing compared. It was nothing compared to Scud missiles being flown over your head, hitting in the compound where you were close by. So we had to pay attention to those who were there, who had been there a little bit longer than us on the ground, and also because of their rank. And I'm going to tell you a story. I didn't value, I was the opposite of what you're talking about, Brother Pizza, because I had a bad attitude. I'm 18 years old over in a war zone. I didn't like being there. And I had this attitude back then of what else can you do to me? What else can you do to me? You already have me over here a million miles from home, not knowing if I'm going to make it back. So, and I say all that to say, we have a lot of individuals, men and women in the military that are coming home and they're getting out of the military. And then they're going to come over to where, Brother Lawrence, where you work at. They're going to come over to where I work at. And if we don't have enough courage to care and look out for the different signs and try to get to know individuals, how are we going to be able to successfully manage them? Because we're talking about stewardship of the workplace, but is it just about me and my job, or is it about everything that's incorporated in it?
I was listening to something you just said. When you first came in, you had the bad attitude. I remember that guy. You know, that was the guy I hung out with.
Exactly.
But it goes to show you that even back then, you had the mentality of, look where I'm at. look where I am. Like you said, what more can you do to me? It doesn't matter that, you know, I'm in the war zone. It doesn't matter that you've been here longer than me. It doesn't, none of that matters. What matters is I could die, and I don't know when. You know, and so based on how you valued your situation, you didn't value the job. You didn't value the job. Now, interesting enough, if I remember correctly, your work ethics were good. Your work performance was good. So you may have not have valued your situation, but this goes back to what we were talking about last week when we talked about you learn this stuff at home, and you bring it through, and it transcends throughout all other parts of your life. So although you didn't value where you were, and you didn't value the situation, you value the work and or your name or your reputation. And your work was not based on your situation. Your work was based on your upbringing, your raising.
Right. And Brother Thompson, if you can chime in, because you weren't with us last week, so can you tell the listeners, you know, a little bit about how you view stewardship, just from a general perspective, and if you can also tell us about how you view stewardship in the home, because I think that plays a very big part for people to understand you as a manager, a supervisor, a leader, and some of your expectations from what your values are about stewardship at home and what you expect even in the workplace.
Okay. Sure, I'll be glad to. And this is personally or just, you mean, stewardship in general? You talk about me individually?
Yeah, individual, and how did that play into how you view stewardship inside of the workplace?
Well, for me personally, the way I look at things in terms of stewardship and how I manage what I'm given and what I'm responsible for is, one, I take it as a great blessing and a privilege that God allowed me to have a profession and a career. And so I treat that with a certain level of respect and taking my job seriously, doing everything that I can to honor the opportunity I've been given to do the things that I'm doing. I also look at it from the perspective of, you know, being honored enough to have those working along with you that you're responsible for, not just their work but their careers. Also looking at it from the standpoint of trying to make sure I'm putting them in a situation to succeed. I think that's extremely important. People need to feel like they're being set up for success and not being set up, given the new opportunities to fail. And so, you know, if there's a situation where someone's given a task that is, you know, that's going to require a great deal of sacrifice in terms of time and work and all those things, I try to make sure we look at things as a team and everybody is able to come to each person to get resources, to get information, to get help, so that our success is tied in together with one another. So not just them making me look good when we do things well, but also me putting them on display when they're doing things and excelling and going above and beyond. I also think, you know, people need time to – I look at a job and profession totally different. I feel like you're a professional, you're grown up, you're mature, you're responsible. You know, if you don't – I don't look at things like if you're not here at 8 o'clock on the dot, you know, I'm looking at the clock. You know, wait a minute. We do things differently. We are responsible for a certain amount of work, certain things to be done. So, you know, I feel like in that, you know, especially being a father and, you know, having three boys and knowing the demands that comes along with that, I'm always trying to be considerate of folks' their time, their value, their family time, not penalizing them for having a family and things that come along with that. Trying to be there to genuinely care about people, genuinely care about what's going on in their life, being
right.
involved with what's going on in their life, taking part when I can in things happening in their life, being sympathetic to things that take place with life when it happens to us, because it does. And then what that does, it makes us more than just a bunch of coworkers. It makes us, I'm not saying necessarily, you know, we're the best of friends and all that, but we have good relationship, and that's what it's about. It's about having good, healthy relationships with one another. It's about respecting one another. Respect is something that I do believe that you have to earn. You know, there's certain things we're in position to where I'm in a position of leadership, so there's a certain amount of respect that you have to give a person, yeah, that's true. But at the same time, respect that is earned is valued respect that gets you a whole lot more from that person than just something that's positional that you've been placed in. When they begin to see in you and in them, and I hope this is what you're asking me, so if I'm off subject, please correct me.
Somebody needs to hear it, bro. Go ahead. Roll with it.
Okay. So, you know, when you're able to gain that respect from that person, and they see that, hey, this is somebody I can, you know, have confidence in, believe in, that I can really see a lead, that takes you to a different place. And the kind of commitment you get from that person is greater than anything than just the paycheck is going to get. Because while money is a motivator, it is not the only motivator. You know, you've got certain people that they want the financial reward, and that's great. And some people need that, you know, that pat on the back. I've got somebody on my team now that if he doesn't get a consistent pat on the back with everything that he does, he feels devalued and underappreciated. And while that does take a little bit more in terms of being a manager and being over folks to dealing with some of those personalities, that's the job. The job is managing people. And that's a part of it. And in terms of my home, you know, I'm old school. I was raised by a single mother, but my mother always kept us in church, kept us where we understood that Christ had to be first. And while I love my job, love my career, nothing in this world is more important than my family. Church isn't more important than my family. I believe that family is the bedrock for society, and when the family is happy and successful, social issues decline, social concerns decline because the family is taken care of. So I spend a great deal of time. Like I said, I have three boys, one getting ready to go off to college, and I'm going through a real sad time getting ready to have him move off hundreds of miles away from me. But we're very close. I spend a lot of time with them. My wife and I both do. I believe in playing hard. I believe in working hard so I can play hard. We take a lot of vacations as a family. You know, we go off a lot because we work hard. We do a lot. My boys work hard in school. I expect that from them. You know, so I believe in rewarding success. I believe in rewarding hard work. I believe that laziness is a killer. I don't tolerate it under no circumstances. For my boys, from those I work with, my wife is an extremely hard worker. She is. She will absolutely overdo it at times, and I have to, as the head of the house, make her slow down, go take a break. Hey, you know, you need to de-stress. You need to let some of this stuff go. But you know, I believe in a very, very strong family. I love working well and working hard and being successful, but not at the detriment of my family, and not at the detriment of those that I work with, to their family. And I think there's a real danger in men, especially to do that. Not that women don't, they certainly do. But we definitely want to make sure that that's the priority, that family is the priority, that Christ is the priority. When we do those things, the right Christian values, morals and values, helps to ensure that I have the right principles in my life to make me successful at home and at work. And I really believe that.
Brother, you said a mouthful. I'm sitting over here doing like Brother Feaster, taking notes. One thing I really, really appreciate what you said. And if you want to join into the conversation, we encourage everybody, once again, press one on your dial pad and we'll bring you in. You said respect that is earned is valued respect. And Brother Feaster, I'm coming to you because you were just asking about something about value.
Yeah, I was listening to what he was saying, and I was thinking about what my comment about how things have changed over time with the mentality of the younger kids coming on, and their mentality is when I came in, we valued the person as opposed to the rank, as opposed to now they value we value the rank instead of the person. Now they value the person instead of the rank. And my question was, you know, one of the things that they're saying now throughout the military with leadership is you can't fake care. You can't fake it. You cannot fake if you care about somebody or not. You can't fake it. So one of the things that has came out when he was talking about, you know, what he does in his job with his subordinates was, even though times have changed, but caring for someone has always affected our subordinates. And my question is, how does this affect the value of our job? I want to ask that question.
Well, I don't have the answer. I'll take a stab at it, but we want to hear from you, the listeners. Press one of your dial pad, and we'll bring you into the conversation. For me personally, if you don't value your job, I don't believe people who say they value their job but don't give 100%. I don't believe in giving 110%. I just say there's only 100% that you can give. The whole is 100. And most of us don't give 100% every single day. If you really was able to sit back and evaluate our day at the end of the workday and say, did I give 100%? It's probably not. But I think what's important is that you do the best that you can. Sometimes I needed to go walk around my facility. Sometimes I just had to go walk around the facility. If I'm sitting there working on something, it may look like to one person that I'm not doing anything. So I think we also have to be careful about the perception that we give off, as well as understanding that people will have a perception of what we are or are not doing, and it could be totally false. I value my position. I have a very, very critical position at the place where I work at. And I value it because I know that everything that everybody else does affects everybody else. So the position that I'm in, I'm required to have those types of skill sets to be able to see what you're doing and what you're doing and how that affects everybody else. Because at the end of the day, it's not about me and my area. When we come to get inspected or when I'm going around doing an inspection, it's about what is actually going to affect the whole facility as a whole. And I agree with you, Brother Thompson, that it really, the value of respect is key. I sat down and had a meeting with a couple of department heads, and I'm on the executive team where I work. And I was speaking to them who, they're not underneath me, but they have several supervisors ahead of them where I just have one, which is the whole administrative location. And I was telling them, look, you know, I understand some of the things that y'all are going through. I understand how some of these things actually come out. And because I understand this, I'm trying to make things better for you. Because in the big scheme of things, I need them to do well. And if they don't feel like they're valued, if they don't feel like their people are listening to them because they're always getting hammered, I'm not saying this is the case, but, you know, that's the way sometimes people feel in the workplace, then they're not going to perform to the optimal level that they should be performing at so that we all do well. So, you know, for me personally, there's a lot of things that goes into why I value the position. You know, I think that because of the fact that God has given me this position, he didn't have to give it to me. He could have gave it to anybody else. I wasn't the only person that interviewed for this position. And I'm humble enough to realize that there may be individuals that are more qualified than I am in that position. But at the end of the day, I'm going to do exactly what I know is the right thing to do. My position requires a high level of ethics and value, because if I allow other people to do things that they're not supposed to do, if I allow other people to do things that violate the different policies and standards of the industry, of the facility, of the corporation, of the United States government, then I'm failing, and everybody's going to look at me in the end. So, Brother Thompson, did you have any follow-up to what Brother Peter was asking on that question?
I think what he said was absolutely dead on, because – you know, when he brought the example up earlier, that if you have someone working a kid that works McDonald's, you know, or a person's working McDonald's and they're a cashier, and they value what they do, the level of work, the quality of work is going to be significantly different from a person that doesn't value it. And we get what we put in. So that person that is showing value and worth to what they're doing, chances are that person is going to move up quicker, going to make more, be more successful, and be happier in their job. So that just goes to say that to anybody out there, regardless of what job you have, it may not be the job you want. It may not be the position that you feel you deserve to be in or should be in, but for your own personal benefit, take some value in what you're doing, do it to the absolute best of your ability, and the Bible says promotion comes from the Lord. And so he's going to see that effort. He's going to see that work. And things may not and I would like to at some point share with you what I went through in terms of, like I said, 9 months ago and my mindset and things like that in terms of my value towards my job at the time and what position I didn't get. But I think it might be helpful. But more towards what Feaster was saying, I think everything is absolutely shrouded in that. And if you put value in what you're doing, regardless of what that is, you're going to put yourself in a better position for not just success down the road, but peace of mind on your job and less contention and stress with coworkers on your job. People are going to see that. People recognize a bad attitude quicker than they do a good attitude. And that's, you can see it shows in everything that you're doing. So it would behoove us to do exactly what Brother Feaster was saying. But a lot of times we're not mature enough to make that decision.
Wow. So we've been talking for about 35 minutes. The conversation has been absolutely great, in my opinion. We have a caller that jumped on the line. So what we're going to do, we're going to take this caller, hear his or her comment, and then we're going to come back and see where we go from there. So, caller, we're coming to you with the last four of 7820. Go ahead. You're at the PRF table.
Yes, I have two comments. The first I want to say about value. what I have learned personally on a job is that I think it's important to make sure that when you do your work and you do it with excellence, I think as a supervisor, as someone in leadership, I tend to know that you get more out of your employees if you show them how much you value them, if they work hard. And it goes with little things, whether it's a compliment, whether it's an incentive. And sometimes a lot of people don't do their best or give their best because they do not feel appreciated. And it's not all the time about the money. In this day and age in the economy, it is. But I work at a job where it's definitely not about the money, but I can honestly say I love getting up, going to work. And because I have a supervisor that fights for her team and she makes us feel valued, she makes us feel appreciated. So I do the best that I do, whether it's offering excellent customer service, making sure my report's done on time, not just because it's my duty that's assigned to me, because I know what I do, it makes her look good, it makes the department look good, the team as a whole. The second part about stewardship, I think it's important in a leadership role as well, that sometimes you will have those who really don't understand what it means to be a good steward. And for example, I know a person who works in my place of business, and this person comes to work every day late, has an attitude problem, and she's been working there for like over 6 years. And one day I had to ask a question recently. I'm like, how is it that this person is still here? And the answer was because she know her job, she know what she's doing. But I said it would be a disservice to her if something ever happened where she loses that job. I couldn't imagine anybody else would put up with the things that she has done at our job. And I'm like, they're not helping her. And it's more like a handicap to her. And this is not a young person. This is someone in their 40s. And I just sometimes I watch her in awe. And I pray all the time. I say, Lord, please don't let her lose her job, because I could not imagine anyone else hiring her unless it's like at a fast food restaurant. And it's sad, but I think because no one never set her down or she never got reprimanded for her attitude or the things she have done, she got away with it for all these years, she thinks it's normal. And I think that there is a responsibility and accountability to leaders, to supervisors that have employees under them, as far as not you only being an example, but you're showing on your employees not only that you value them, but if they're not valuing their job, it's up to you to point that out. And that's what I wanted to say.
Wow, thank you. We appreciate your call. Appreciate your caller for that comment. And thank you for tuning in, taking the time to tune into the radio show. And you know, I know that you're a frequent caller because I know your voice now. So thank you again. God bless you. And this is what I would say. Maybe it is that there's something that you're supposed to be doing in addition to praying. Maybe it could be that maybe you're that person that has the type of spirit that sees that and doesn't want something bad to happen to this individual, your coworker, that can go to this individual at the right particular time and maybe try to pull a coattail. Not saying go to blast her out, but maybe just, you know, slowly but surely. Because if nobody ever goes and says anything to her, she'll continue to be the same way. Just a thought. What do you say, Carla? Carla, are you still there? I guess she's off the line, brother. Go ahead.
So what we're talking about is stewardship in the workplace. Mm-hmm. What we started talking about was my responsibility in accordance with my job, my due description, my task, my mission, my whatever it is that you do and whatever they call it in your field. What she has said is still in line with what we're talking about, stewardship in the workplace. As a coworker, it is my responsibility to say something. It is my responsibility, especially if I'm a leader. Now, granted, I may be thinking from the military's perspective, because in the military, again, we have the general military authority, and if that person is subordinate to me and I see this, then I am obligated to say something, and that particular soldier is obligated to react, respond. And maybe I'm looking at it from that aspect, but from what I see, it is still stewardship in the workplace. It is still stewardship in the workplace.
I got you. Well, Brother Thompson, did you have any comments or remarks that you wanted to make to the last comment to call it? Or I know I heard you say something about something else that you wanted to bring. So if you didn't have any response to the caller, go ahead and share that information you were looking to share a little while ago.
Well, I appreciate what the caller shared, and I agree with what she was saying. I think we probably got a lot of similar situations, be it in the corporate world. I'm not the military, maybe a little different, just because of, you know, there's a lot more authority there. There's a lot, the structure's different. I wish certain things ran like the military. I think it'd be a little bit smoother. But in terms of the comments I was going to make earlier, it's just that, you know, talking about mindsets and focus and everything like that. And about 9 months ago, I had applied for a position that I felt like I was overqualified for, and it went to somebody who was significantly less qualified than I was, less times of, you know, less years in service and all those things. And when I put resumes up beside each other, I just felt like I was, you know, passed over for an opportunity. And about 2 months ago, position opened up, and I was given a promotion into a position that paid better, and it was a higher position than what the other job was. And the other job that I had applied for that I wanted so desperately is being phased out. So it's possible that I'd have been looking for a job around this time. And I only brought that up to say that, you know, a lot of times we talk about, you know, positionally where we are, being happy, being content, you know. I think if we can get to the place to where we are looking at things, so many times we focus on our careers and our jobs as in the moment, where I'm at in this moment. But I think if we look at it more of a track and as a path, Am I headed in the right path to where I want to end up in my career, in my position? I think that can guide our attitudes, our principles, our values, and our disciplines from that point to help project us and maybe even a little further. Had things worked out the way I thought I wanted them to, like I said, I would have been in a worse position today than I was in my previous role. But God being God, God being wise, he said he would not let any good thing be held for me. If that was a good thing for me, I would have got it. But it wasn't for me. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that God don't tell me all the plans and he don't give me all the details, but he expects me to trust him. He expects me to walk faithfully. He expects me to, and, you know, the Bible tells us to do things as unto the Lord. We ought to work wisely. We ought to work in excellence as unto him. Do it as unto him. And he's basically saying, you know, a lot of times you might feel like this job isn't worthy of 100% of your effort. I don't give 100% every day. I don't know anybody that does. But, you know, this job may not be worthy of, or this company may not be worthy of me being on time, me taking an hour for lunch. This company I may feel like I deserve to take a few things home that belong to the company and that's not mine. But are those things and those attitudes going to help me, and is that going to be seeing something as unto the Lord? If you look at it from that perspective, I think if we look at it from a biblical perspective, I know we're not having a Bible session. I'm just simply interjecting because this is who I am. Look at it from that perspective, I think we will allow ourselves to essentially have the keys to know what it takes to be successful where we are. We look at examples in Scripture of different men and women of God that have been in jobs or been in roles and positions that they felt were beneath them. When Joseph executed the right mindset and principles, he went from the pit to the palace. It doesn't matter where you are in this moment, you still need to show those same disciplines, that same value towards what you're doing as if it's where you're going to be. That's just me. So thanks for letting me share that, bro.
All right. Hey, let me just say we have a couple callers, so we'll take the callers in order that I'm seeing them on the switchboard. We have a caller from the last 4-3-5-7-9, and then we have a caller. Please hold on. Be patient with us. Caller with the last 4-3-6-6-4. We're coming to you next. So 3-5-7-9, you're at the PRS table. How are you doing this evening?
Good evening, sir. How are you doing this evening?
We are doing well, brother. We're doing well.
I just want to say that I missed last week's show, and then I kind of missed this. I missed a portion of this show tonight, but I want to say, man, you got some outstanding panel of brothers there tonight, and the others that have called in that have really put a lot of input into the stewardship. Really, I can really relate to brothers as far as the military. You know, retired military. You know me. We've covered a lot of ground in that area in our past history. But I remember back in the day when we had NCOs that really cared about the soldiers, and they put the time in to nurture and mentor these soldiers to help them get promoted and help them get the favoritism or help them get favored, you know, being favored in the military or stand out in the military. And so that kind of gave the soldiers something to shoot for. Incentive to want to do better or to be a better steward over what he was given. So I really thank God for the mentors that I had over the 20 years of military that I served. And I thank God for them because they really showed me the good side and the bad side of stewardship. You know, they really did some things and showed me some things that helped me they kind of molded and shaped my life to grow me while I was in the military. But I also, you know, now that I'm a much older, much wiser, I thank God for his examples of stewardship in his word. Definitely the brother that talked earlier, he extensively talked about how Joseph went from the palace, from the pit to the palace. All of those things come into nature. But the thing about it being a faithful steward, you know, I was reflecting on the word it talks about over in Matthew. He said, you know, if you're faithful over a few things, I'll make you rule over much. You know, that says a lot because that covers the whole spectrum of, in today's society, employee and employer. eventually you start off as an employee. I don't know too many people that went straight to, you know, to be the employer unless they the CEO of their own companies, whatever the case may be. But still, you start in general, you start off as an employee, and the employer is watching your progress. He may or may not mentor you in the process, or depending on his capabilities or how much information or how much knowledge he has in the situation. But still, he's watching you to see if you're growing in the situation or growing in the work. If you're being faithful, if you're being on time, you're putting out a good product, you know, things of that nature, having good stewardship over it. And the employer can trust the employee more and more with more responsibility. I'm not going to say too much tonight because I really just, like you said, I'm taking notes, mental notes and written notes, just jotting down things that are really good on the table tonight. There's a lot of good things on the table tonight, and it would behoove everybody that's listening right now to really eat from the table, to really eat from the table and gather up some of this information and then take it back to your workplace. Because I can tell you right now, where I work at Old Fort Benning, it's a very explosive area where people's attitudes and their mindset about job performance and how they do things, and some people, you know, they're good at what they do, and some people are just mediocre. You know, they don't care. They're just there to collect a paycheck. But, you know, taking pride and responsibility and having good stewardship, it means a lot to the employer when he sees that in an employee. And, you know, you never know who's watching you. You know, God watches it. God sees everything. But it's amazing when you got an employer or a boss or whatever that's watching you work, and then all of a sudden you're wondering what's going on. Yeah, I understand. The word, you know, we definitely know that the promotions come from the north. But we also understand that God has also placed you on someone's heart while you work. So it really is a big responsibility for the employer and employee in this stewardship program. It's really a program that if we don't monitor it correctly, some people would get overlooked and some people would just be there in the way.
Wow.
It would just be in the way. So that's all I got to say.
All right. Well, brother, we appreciate you and thank you for your comments. And come back and continue to fellowship with us. Caller, we're coming to you next, last four of 3664. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. My name is Antonio Starks, and that's my first time on the program.
Hey, brother. How you doing today?
The friend of mine was telling me about this, so I've been listening to the programs and really have been enjoying what I've been listening to and definitely taking notes as well. Something I would like to say, in my own experience, I should say in the work business, having the right attitude and knowing who you are in Christ, knowing who you are as a person and going into a job and delivering that, I think is very important. And one doesn't always have to be in a supervisor, owner position, manager's position to be a leader. I believe that when you are, whether you're, I can only speak from where I'm from, but in my experience, I worked at a place for 8 years and went through a lot of ups and downs. And I say this and make this point because it's important that I say this. I worked for a company where the gentleman was a racist, and I still stayed on this job for 8 years, and I believe it was simply just the grace of God, and just God had a plan for me while I was on this job. And long story short, I went through hearing how this black man stole from him and so on and so forth, and he never trusts black people again. And this older guy, elderly guy, came up to me one day after working for the company for so long, and he told me, he pulled me to the side, and he said, you know, he said, I swore I'd never hire another black person for this company ever again. He said, until I met you. He said, and when I met you, he said, everything about you and everything that you bring to this company, he says, I want you to know it changed my thinking and my thought on how I think about black people. He said, and I want to apologize, he said, because having you work for this company, he says, you have totally changed my thinking. Anytime you need a job, anytime you are seeking employment, you always have a job here. He said, you're hearing that from me, and I'm the owner. He says, you always have employment here. And I say that there was more to it, but I say that to say this. that was a humbling experience for me because I go on these jobs, you know, a lot of times, and, you know, we get through that too. Sometimes you just don't want to do this. You're tired of doing this. You know, we forget while we're what our reason is for being there. And we never know what God may have us to do or why we're there for that job. And I think it's important to be humble when you go on these jobs and to work hard and work unto God, because when God sees, you know, your heart in this, there's other purposes that he may have you there for. You don't always have to be a manager, supervisor, you know, or whatever to be used or to be an example. And leaving this job and going through what I went through, I hear all the time from my family back home that the owners or the bosses will come up with tears in their eyes saying, we really miss him. When he was here, there was laughter, there was fun, there was positivity, people and, you know, the customers love, you know, so on and so forth. So you can leave an impact just being who you are in the Lord and giving your all in the job. And no matter what you go through or your circumstances, leave it in God's hands, and God will make your enemies your footstool and turn their lives around in the same sense. So it's important to go in with a good, positive attitude. Whatever you do in life, I'm learning this, to do it with a good heart, a humble heart, and do it unto God, because when you do it unto God, God will turn situations around and turn something that you saw so small into something so big that will carry you on throughout your life.
Wow. We thank you, brother. We thank you for your comments, and thank you for sticking in there, because one of the things about this show is it's really about change and transformation. It's about how we can discuss things that are sensitive to us, to each other, how we can deal with the situation in a respectable manner for those of us who follow Christ, you know, to bring the Christ out in us and exhibit that, and making sure God is getting the glory and the honor in the end. So we thank you for being an example, good brother, and continue the good fight, because God is not done with you yet.
Yes, sir. If I can say too real quick, so if that's okay with you guys, I want to also say that I stood my ground, and one thing my mom always taught us, that there's a right way to say everything. When you know who God is, you can walk in there and be firm and stand your ground and not have to worry about losing your job, because you know that he's giving you the words to say. And I stood my ground, and I knew what to say, but what I said was powerful, and it was an impact. And it wasn't what I said, it was what, you know, I believed that the Lord was telling me, because nor did I lose my job. I stood my ground and gained respect in that sense, too. So sometimes you do have to speak up.
I got you, brother. Trust me, I know that. I think all of us on this side of the airways know that very, very well. I know myself, I know brother have, and definitely brother Lawrence. So again, thank you, brother, and thank you for taking your time out to come and just sit with us at the table this evening. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right. As you may or may not know, you know, for those who are just tuning in, we really just want everybody to really understand that this is just not a show about money. This is, you know, not a show just about getting out of debt. It's not a show about helping with the debt situations, building up your credit. It's really about having these type of financial, economic-driven conversations that affect everybody's life. It affects my life. It affects your life in some way, shape, or form. And we're doing this by discussing possessions, resources, and finances, and how the three of those critical components individually and collectively affect you, affect me, our local communities, and even the broader communities and global communities. So what I'm saying is we're striving to just continue to provide a platform, and I think that's a good word to use, a platform where we can explore how all three of these components are interconnected and interdependent upon each other, because that's how we are as people, as the individuals that God has placed on this earth. We are all interconnected. We are all interdependent upon one another. So when we can have kind of conversations like this, I think it just opens up. I think it just releases. I think it just frees individuals' mindsets and things that they've been taught. Because I've never heard what we're talked about, one, in the church. If we were in church, brothers, we would have been cut off probably about 30 minutes ago, right? Because no one wants to hear us talking like this, because there's different agendas or whatever the case may be. So, Brother Feaster, Brother Lawrence, I thank you. what I wanted to do was just real briefly, let me just take a quick break. If you want to join back into the conversation, press one on your dial pad, post some comments on Facebook at directions.resources.finances. We're going to take just a short break for about a minute, and then we're going to come back and we're going to hit something. I'm really let you know where this whole episode of the show actually got its roots from. So we'll be
put this chaos back into order. These times will have you second guessing yourself, your faith, your dreams. Got children to clothe and shelter and feed. These times are when the desire for prosperity is fueled by survival, not greed. Feast or famine, that's the artist's life. The balancing act is to stay unwavering, committed, even when times are tight. But weakness comes when bills pile up and you wanna give up, but don't give up.
Thank you. This is Brother Dunlap. You're listening to the PRF Table. I have with us Brother Feaster and Brother Lawrence Thompson, who've been holding it down with us for about the past hour, so we thank you for sticking in there with us. Let me tell you what was on my mind, Brother Feaster, Brother Lawrence.
Excuse me. One of the things that I heard towards the end of last week was some business about a sequester. And hopefully y'all are a little bit familiar about that, because I wasn't when I heard it, because I haven't been paying too much attention to the news. And when I found out what it really was, where we had our government had to, or made a choice to cut some spending across the board, and I realized that there was a lot of people, and probably still are, a lot of individuals that are out there now that were kind of scared. And I don't know if that's the perception that you have heard or have felt, but that's what I know I've been hearing, wondering whether they're going to lose their jobs. And let me tell you where my heart said. I said, this is prime opportunity, and I just thank God that we have possessions.resources and finances, and we're talking about it on the show. And I thought about why are these individuals fearful? Because there's a cut being cut across. And I asked my wife, and I said, okay, so explain this to me. And she said, well, you know, at my job, we have maybe 30 people. And out of these 30 individuals, when these cuts come across the various different agencies, somebody, maybe one or two people, are going to lose their job. And Brother Lawrence, I want you to definitely chime in on this when I finish. So one or two people are going to lose their job. And I said, man, that's crazy. And then I said, well, why can't there be the type of spirit that instead of one or two people losing their job, maybe those other 28 can say, maybe I can take a little, excuse me, maybe I'll take a little reduction in my salary so we can make up collectively whatever is needed so these individuals don't lose their job. To me, I think that's a good concept. To me, I think that's biblical. But I also recognize that everybody in the workplace is not a Christian. Everybody in the workplace doesn't follow God or follow Christ. So I thought about it, and I said, man, it's really sad that people are fearful about losing their job. But where are we standing up at trying to make sure that we can do what we can do to try to help people not lose their job? Because the reality is this. When those individuals who may lose their job, some of them are going to come to our churches, right? And as they come to their churches, now what we're doing is we're being reactive Christians, not proactive Christians. What we're doing now is spending time going to God and praying that this individual gets a job, but what about the ones that don't have the necessary skills? What about the ones that's been in positions for a long period of time, such as what we experience in our area, Brother Thompson? What happens when those type of things happen? People are behind the eight ball, and it affects everybody because we are inside of a community. So I just want to hear your comments, Brother Thompson. I want to hear yours, Brother Feaster, and anybody else that wants to chime in on what we're talking about right now, because I just think it's sad, and that's my personal opinion, that, you know, when things like this happen, people get running scared versus saying, what can I do to try to help somebody else out? Brother Thompson?
Well, you're speaking to a situation that is, you know, definitely something that hits home for everybody. You know, we look at things, the media is pumping fear into trying their best to pump fear into everybody, into what's happening, what's taking place. And unfortunately, because our government's been irresponsible, then it's hurting us, it's hurting people. And in our personal lives, you know, I think a lot of us have made some mistakes regarding our finances, and as a result, we've had to take some cuts. But I think when we look at what we can do from a realistic vantage point, I mean, honestly, the best church model that we've ever had was the Acts Church. And the way that church functioned, people say that can't exist today in terms of everybody chipping in, bringing their resources together to make sure all needs got met. There's just so much distrust that that position, that place can't, is not viable. But there's things, I think the best thing we can do is look at it from, rather than a lot of times we want to try to, you know, we try to push and try to come together as a community. We really make a big push towards those things. I think those things are fine. Those things are a lot harder to make happen than you saying, for example, or me saying, God, show me somebody that needs some help that you want, that I need help. I think if you look at it from a personal standpoint, you know somebody that's going through, because we all do. I mean, there's too much lack and need out there. We all know somebody. I think if we look at it from the perspective of, you know, someone lost their job, helping that, maybe what we can do is not always in finances. It's not always in providing money. A lot of times, you know, maybe a person lost their job because their particular field, their particular area of focus, maybe it was manufacturing. Let's not be done away with. Well, I'm in the IT field, right? And let's say everything's moving towards technology that they need to get trained in a new area. Maybe I can provide them with some resources or some training to help them apply for a new job or a better job. I think if we look at what we can do, because not everybody can put money down and say, hey, here's $100, here's $500. You may not have it yourself. You've been working every day. But there's always something we can do to help somebody else. There's always something we can do. And a lot of times we may not know what that is until you talk to people. And if people feel like you genuinely want to help, I don't think pride is the issue anymore. I think folks know, hey, if I need help, I'm going to holler. So I think if we take the initiative to talk to people, not just people that we know, you know, sometimes it's just you'll hear about a situation. You may not know anything about it, but there's something you can do that you can sow into that person or you can provide. And if everybody does a little bit of something, we can really cut down on the needs and the hurts that have taken place and will continue to take place. The Bible says the poor you'll always have with you. So there's always going to be somebody with a need. And as much as God has blessed us and given all of us, I know on this radio cast and those listening, I'm sure we're looking at situations and saying, you know what, I've got two of these or I've got this, and I know someone over here and they may not have this. Maybe I can provide something to be a blessing.
And it's amazing because you were on the show a couple of weeks ago, Diversities of Stewardship, and what you just said was the same thing Brother Faiz said. He said something to the effect that, you know, we all go out to eat. We all spend money on, you know, we go to the store, get some gas, we go run into the store, you know, buy a $2, you know, soda or whatever the case may be. And he was talking about if everybody just took $5 a week from what they spend like that and was to give it to the homeless shelter or some place that feeds the hungry or something within our community, we can erase some of the nonsense that's going on and some of the hurts that people are having if we just take a stand.
And let me say this, and I know you're itching to say something, Brother Feaster. You know, I brought that up because it was a conversation starter. Because oftentimes, if we don't have something, I say everything, I always say it like this. Everything begins with the conversation. What I was proposing for the federal government, it just doesn't work like that. I know that. But if we don't get somebody to have some type of initiation of a conversation about the problem and some type of possible solution, then we're not doing the right thing, because it's easy to talk about the problem and then continue talking about the problem and continue to talk about the problem. But if we think what the problem is, come with a solution, then everybody starts thinking. We start brainstorming. Say, hey, well, you know what, that may not work in this particular arena. Maybe we can try this. And then next thing you know, we got people that are joining with us to say, hey, let us be a part of this. Let's go ahead and move in this particular direction. So the feast, go ahead, sir.
I had a comment, but as you were talking, I began to think about something that I learned years ago. And I'm going to ask a question, then I'm going to go into an answer. Which one is easier, victim focus or society focus? And what do I mean by that? When we see a situation and we know that there needs to be a change, what's easier to fix? What approach is easier to get after? Is it easier for me to tackle the victim, or is it easier for me to tackle society? And the answer is, it's easier for me to tackle the victim. So I have one person that's affected. I can deal with that one person. I can deal with that one person. Right now, the military is dramatically being affected with their sequestering. But the military is only 1% of the population in the United States. You see what I'm saying? So that's a small portion. So it's easier for me to handle the victims. There's programs out there. There's unemployment out there. There's second jobs out there. But how are you going to get a second job when folks can't even find a first job? But there's different agencies and different functions out there that we can do, even different strategies right now that they're trying to use to mitigate the issue. The issue is, and I'm not going to get into politics because, number one, I'm not that much of a politician, and two, I have some personal issues I have to deal with on that. But two, you know, if we look at this, I mean, I remember when we started talking about the budget being balanced like 2 years ago, and they was making a big deal about all the changes, and they was like, it's only 2% of the total deficit that they're fighting over. Granted, that 2% needs to be taken advantage of. We need to do something about that 2%, because if we don't start somewhere, then we will always end up where we are. But if that's all we're focusing on is the 2%, what about the other 98%? So, you know, being that I'm military, of course I'm passionate about this portion, but every time we go into budget cuts, the two most important things that everybody says that we need and we need to invest in, we need to put money in, are the first two things that they start cutting. That's school, education, and defense. Mm. But what about everything else? What about everything else? Why are those the first two? And maybe because I'm passionate, and maybe I just don't understand politics like that. But what about the 98? There are 98 other percent stuff that we need to deal with that we're not. So that's why I asked the question up front. It really changed my whole perspective on what I was about to say. But, you know, there's victim focus and there's society focus. We're too busy. It is easier to deal with the victim. And I'm going to briefly talk about what I intended to say, and I'm going to get out the microphone. But we for the last three or four shows, we briefly touched into sacrifice and stewardship. We briefly, but it keeps coming up, sacrifice and stewardship. So my question is, you know, like JR, you asked, what happens if you have a staff of 30 and one person get cut? Well, what is everybody else willing to do, or what can everybody else do? Well, if I'm not willing to sacrifice, nothing's going to get done. Nothing's going to get done. And so it goes back to when Brother Saeed was on, and he was saying how, you know, in his culture, his religion, the Muslim, you don't ask for interest on the dollar, because he's more worried about the relationship between me and my brother than I am this money. And so that's my question now in the workplace. Am I more focused on this job, or am I focused on the relationship and the other person that's about to get cut? So it's just something that I noticed the past couple of weeks, that we're tapping into sacrifice when it comes to stewardship. And I'm stopping right there.
You are known, Brother Feaster, for towards the end of the show to just go off. So you actually went off about 5 minutes earlier than you normally do. But I appreciate it, brother, because I appreciate your passion. And I truly say that with all due respect and admiration. I appreciate your passion because you speak from the heart. And, you know, nobody's ever going to get an invite from me that's not going to be real and come on the show and talk straight from the heart. You know, I had made a comment, Brother Thompson, a couple of days ago, and this goes ties into what you were saying about the sacrifice. We're talking about the title of tonight's show is Stewardship of the Workplace. Well, we talked about the corporate side in which you and I reside. We talked about the military side, which Brother Feaster resides. But what about the church side? Stewardship of the workplace as it relates to ministry.
And here is one of the questions that I had, Brother Thompson, or maybe it was a statement. I don't know. I can't remember. And I said, and I think you will appreciate this as a former youth pastor. I'll throw that out there for those who don't know. Oftentimes when things start getting tight inside of the church, I look to see, okay, where is the sacrifice in that? And I was thinking about this for this show. I said, you know, a lot of times when we're dealing with our youth, we, from my context alone, we're raising money for our youth. We're having sales of baked goods for our youth. We're selling wristbands for our youth, all of these different things, because the budget of the church is tight. And then my question was, well, we don't sell dinners to help pay our pastor's salary. Could there be that same sacrifice that we expect everybody, and we're all ministers, ladies and gentlemen, all three of us that are on the show this evening. Where is the sacrifice from the pastoral perspective? Because when I read my Bible, when it was time for David to initiate the building of the temple, David gave first. When I read my Bible, when it was time to start the erection of the tabernacle, it was Abram. So help me out, Brother Thompson. I'm just really like, you know, do we have to sell stuff for our children? But what about the pastor? You know, I never hear, and you know, maybe I'm just not in that circle. And I would love somebody, you know, if you have an experience and that you know that that's something that has happened, why don't we have the same expectations in the church that we have of the corporate world, that we have of the military? To me, that seems hypocritical, or maybe it's just cowardly. I don't know. Brother Thompson, help me out.
Well, you're definitely going down a dangerous path with this one, but I'll go ahead and jump in. We talk about this stuff all the time.
And before you say that, notice I'm doing it towards the end of the show, right?
That was smart. That was really... Well, and I think, you know, like I said, I'm sure, you know, we talked about this before, but the church today is run like a business instead of like a ministry in many cases. I would say in most cases that I've come across. And that's a sad truth. And as a result, for example, in business, when things are tight and things aren't, I won't even say tight, when profits are reduced, upper-level management looks to cut numbers of just normal FTEs, full-time employees, cut their numbers, cut jobs, but you don't see those pay cuts being made at the executive level. You don't see them shying away from bonuses, and that's, unfortunately, that's taking place too many times in churches, and obviously not every church, but we've seen that to be a big priority. And I think the problem is that you know, you talk about in terms of how we view funding for different things. You know, you talked about, you know, we'll raise a chicken dinner for the youth to go on a ministry trip, but we won't sell pies for Pastor to get his paycheck.
That's right.
Pat is not trying to take a pick. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that the problem is priorities. If our youth were really a priority, then we would make a better effort in terms of from all levels, not just from a leadership level, but we would do a better job into making sure that the needs of those young people were met. Now, I feel like a lot of times, more so than taking cuts and losses, I think the issue is what we're trying to, the things that we're doing are the things that we're trying to do for the youth or for the community even, are those things fruitful? I mean, are they productive enough for us to be sinking in the money that we do? You know, is it more productive to me to put $20,000 to send the youth on a youth conference, or is it more productive for me to spend $20,000 to have my youth go into the community in some areas of need and take some food or take some clothes? What would be a better fruit from the investments that we're making? And I think that's what we need to rethink as well. Some of these efforts that we have, some of these things that we're doubling down on and what we're trying to accomplish, you know, they haven't been productive in the past, and chances are they won't be productive now. So I think we're wasteful. I think we're wasteful, and we're not willing to think outside the box of what we've done in terms of ministry and stewardship, because if the church runs the way that God has designed it to run and operate, then we would get much better results than what we have today. That's just my thought, bro.
And let me share what, and I'm going to tell you, I was thinking about this in response to preparing for a future show on giving and tithing. And the question that I asked on Facebook was, why is it that supporting our youth, for example, missions, trips, et cetera, in our churches come from fundraisers or special offerings, quote unquote, but ministerial salaries comes from tithes? PRF family, this and similar questions are being posed from inside and outside the church. And let me give a response from Brother Lonnie Grimes, who says, unfortunately, a lot of churches don't know how to correctly budget and set multiple funds that are invested in by the general fund. Also, most churches appear to put as much influence and importance into their funds and ministry outside of the general fund or maybe benevolence. Since most other ministries, youth, missions, etc., are primarily only requiring funds a few times a year, a lot of churches don't see a need to establish a system of percentages going to those accounts weekly or biweekly. Larger churches are rarely ran on the same system as smaller to medium-sized churches. He says, anyway, there's a few other thoughts that go with this, but he's going to save them, and I ask him to please share them at a later time if he will. He says, we tend to shy away from running church finances as a business, to your point, Brother Thompson, but yet we expect or want to have the profit in our overall funds. I think there's something healthy business mindsets that would there's some healthy business mindsets that would go a long way in managing the church finances that would allow it to be even more effective in the community. So there's a lot of us that have some similar mindsets and a lot of good thoughts. I think these are just things that really need to be explored. But I did it at the end of the show because I know that, you know, if we'd have done it earlier, we probably wouldn't have got any further than that. And that's to your point, Brother Feaster. So did you have anything on that, Brother Feaster, before we get ready to wrap it up for this evening?
Okay, I'm gonna try to make this short, but I want to tell you, I do know a pastor that, matter of fact, this will be my only point, so I won't get on my soapbox. I do know a pastor that when the budget got tight in church, he took the first, actually I know two now that I think about it, he took the first pay cut. I know two pastors that when the budget got tight, they were the ones that took the first pay cut, and they led from the front. One of the pastors, I will tell you, he had a secondary job. The pastorship was actually not his primary source of income. He was very well taken care of at his primary job. So taking a pay cut was easy for him. But the other pastor, the first pastor that I've seen do this, the church was his primary income. So there's more I want to say, but because of the time, I'm just going to say I do know of two pastors that when the budget got tight, they were the first ones to lead the fight and sacrifice and giving back to the church.
And I'm glad you said that, Brother Feaster, because if we don't talk about the ones that are doing, then we'll constantly talk about the ones who are not doing.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up. And I would love to get this pastor on the show, whether he's still a pastor or not. This brother, let's get him on the show in a future show, because it's something that people need to hear, because the church has a very, in some people's eyes, they don't have the most positive light. So we have to be the ones that bring the light to the forefront so people can see that it's not all bad. Everybody's not doing things the way that other people think they're doing them. And it's a positive thing, because God is really, really expecting us to be good stewards over these airwaves. He's expecting us and expecting me to make sure we're being fruitful in the conversations that we're engaging. So as we go ahead and close it down for the last couple of minutes, Brother Thompson, I'll go ahead and let you give your final comment now. And let me say, Brother Thompson, it's definitely a pleasure for you to be on the show with us once again. Last time you were on with me on Freedom Radio when I was hosting a show on Freedom Radio with Kimberly Skeen, which, just to let everybody know, still meets on Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Blog Talk Radio Network. So, again, I'm glad that you were able to come and taking the time away from your family, because I do know how much you care about your family and how you do manage your time. That's one of the things that I greatly appreciate about you. So can you just give us some words of wisdom, some comments, and take us out with your final comments, and then we'll come to Brother Feaster and wrap it up for this evening.
Well, thank you guys for letting me be a part, Jerry. I appreciate you, you know, always being so gracious. Brother Feaster, I definitely enjoyed hearing what you had to say. I thought it was very, very fruitful, very good wisdom, and I had a lot of positive takeaways myself. I would just, you know, maybe like to just say to everybody out there that, you know, regardless of what place you find yourself in, regardless of what situation you find yourself in, number one, if you will trust God and you will allow him to lead and guide you, he will help you to get to a situation of success, because that's what he wants. I firmly believe in Jeremiah 29:11 says that I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you hope in the future. And that's exactly what we want to speak over all of our folks over here on radio, that that you will be able to take some things that we were sharing in terms of value and stewardship and, you know, walking in kind of integrity and wisdom that we're all capable of walking in, that you're going, that path will get you to a place of success and promise that we all feel that, you know, we want to be in. You know, I basically have come to an understanding that I feel like being bivocational, like Paul was, is a really, really beneficial route for me as a minister, as a man of God, because, you know, you don't want to ever be, Paul didn't want to be a burden on the church. I certainly want to be a burden on anybody, and the Bible tells us about honoring the man of God and honoring those that walk in that place of spiritual authority. But we also have responsibility as those men and women, those leaders, to make sure that we put the needs of the people and the will of God in the forefront of all that we do. So
that's right.
I appreciate everybody's time, and I enjoy everything.
Thank you. Thank you. Brother Feaster, thank you, my brother, for taking the time out, and thank you also for your service to this country that we live in. Although it's not perfect, it is the one that God has placed us in to do a special work on his behalf. So thank you for all that you do. And did you have any parting comments for this evening before we close it out?
Yeah, I'm, of course, you know, I'm going to try to keep it short. It is my pleasure to accept the invitation to come and do this, because, J.R., you and I go way back, and as we started this and as we progress in this, I remember way back in Desert Storm, some of the dialogue that we had, which honestly has not changed over 20 years of knowing each other, and it's showing here in this show. But I my closing comment, I'm going to try to keep this real short, because you hit my passion, and then you said it's time to go for it. But Kirk Franklin said when the recession started, when they was really starting to cut off jobs and people couldn't see their way through, Kirk Franklin said that we're looking at our jobs as the source
He said, our jobs are not the source, but our job is a resource. Our source is God. Now, those of us that have faith and those of us that believe, we understand that. Those that don't have faith and don't believe, they're still hoping that for you. One thing that I've noticed throughout this PRF table, we have dealt very little with finances because everything that we've talked about, if you look at it and apply it to your finances, then you will understand why we talk very little about finances. Understanding your stewardship at work, understanding your stewardship at home, these things play a part in your finances. And I'm going to stop right there because I feel it coming. So thank you for another night. It's been great. I've learned a lot, and I'm excited about next week already.
Which I have no idea what it's going to be, so we're going to let God lead us, and that's how we do it. So just a couple final thoughts before we close it out for the evening. I thank you, and on behalf of myself, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders in her absence, Brother Thompson gracing us with his presence as a guest on this show, thank you for just being with us. It is important that what we do is not about getting pats on the back. It's about what the changes that are going to come inside of your life. If there's some change that happens from what we discuss and what others who have the courage to call in, have a heart's desire to call in and make comments on the air or whether it's on the Facebook page, we're looking for God to be a blessing, but we're also using for God to use us to help be the conduit between us and people. And as ministers, myself, Brother Thompson, and Brother Feaster, of course, it's really about showing the love of Christ, because there's a lot of things that we could be doing, but we've got to do what we know we're supposed to be doing, and that's a whole lot more important. I just want to give you a quick update for those who are still holding on with us. I'm really, really grateful, and I probably will say this again, Brother Feaster, on next week's show, when so many more of our listeners are actually on the air. But we had a weekly reach on our Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances, of about 1,200 Facebook friends. And I just think that's phenomenal. We had 78 just over a couple of days. So, you know, about 100 people were having conversations on the Facebook page. So we encourage everybody to just continue to listen to the show. We encourage everybody, tell your friends, tell your family members. As Brother Feaster said, and I said earlier, this is not just about money. I've taught on personal financial management for several years. I taught it for the Army. I was over a program about, you know, 100-something thousand students have come up under the program that I was over. I've stood on the platform. I've dealt with the issues. I've dealt with it on the law enforcement side as well. And there's people out here that are hurting and people that are trying to get help. And there's no quick fixes, which is why that God has just really release me not to be like everybody else in this ministry of possession, resources, and finances. It's not about me giving you a quick fix. I can help you get your credit straight in 30 days. But what happens after you get your credit straight? If we haven't dealt with the root cause, if you don't have that spirit of gratitude, if you don't recognize that God is the owner of everything and you're just a manager, if you don't get rid of some of the stuff that God has told you that you're not supposed to have or told you that you're not supposed to have and you're still trying to manage it, and how are we going to waste our time trying to help you be blessed? Because in actuality, really, we're doing nothing but helping you be cursed. And I'm not going to have that on my conscience. I'm not going to have that on my spirit. I'm not going to stand before God one day and have to answer for that. So we're going to do it the way God wants us to do it. And God bless everybody that's listening out there. We thank everybody as well. We have listeners from all over Georgia, all over North Carolina, down in Miami, all over Philly, Boston and the Boston area. So we thank you for tuning in, Arizona. We're able to see a little bit of where you're coming from. Continue to tell people again. So as we go, I just wanted, this came to me earlier, and Brother Feaster, Brother Thompson, it was really laid on my heart that, you know, when I end the show this evening, God really wanted me just to pray as the end of the show. And after this, we'll just play a song that we had already set inside of the show. So give me just a minute. You know,
my prayer is that as we walk and talk in the workplace, this workplace that God has given us, that our actions do nothing but exemplify and glorify God, God who is the true CEO, the true president, the true senior partners, true supervisor, and that we bring glory to his name and his name alone. And if we're not, we ask for repentance for that. We ask for his forgiveness. And we ask also for a gentle conviction, and I say gentle, to help us realize that whatever position that we're in that is representative of who God is and of him, and that we get convicted if we need to, that whatever position we're in, that we realize and understand that the position is for a purpose. And I also pray that it be through a conviction that guides us to follow the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them, treat others as you would have them or as you want to be treated. And especially for those in supervisory and leadership position or management positions, as we've talked about this evening. And let it be through these actions that we can hopefully follow the words of Jesus, our Christ, the Christ, when he said, love one another just as he has loved us. So until we meet again, until we sit down at the table next week, we just pray God's blessings upon you. And pray about whatever's going on in your life. Pray about whatever it is that God, that you think God is calling you to do, what it is that God wants you to do. And remember that stewardship in the workplace is a reflection of stewardship at home. So with that, we're going to say goodnight. We have a show, a song coming up from a good group that I truly adore, Men of Standard, and it's called Prayer Will. So as we go out, God bless you and have a wonderful week.
Afraid.